Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has come under increasing scrutiny for practices that appear to contrast his campaign pledge of historic transparency. Last week, it was reported that Cuomo does not use email for official correspondence, relying instead on proprietary BlackBerry pin-to-pin messages, which leave no paper trail. Sunday, the Times Union reported that Cuomo aides removed several documents from the state archives related to a Freedom of Information request by the newspaper. Today, the New York Times reports that Cuomo administration has restricted access to his archived files from his time as AG, Attorney General, related to the Troopersgate scandal. Joining me in the studio today is one of the most respected people in state government, Robert Freeman, Executive Director of the New York State Committee on Open Government, an agency that Mr. Freeman has survived as the head of in the Pataki administration, the Cuomo administration, been really something.
The Kerry administration, and going back to Malcolm Wilson.
No kidding. That's fantastic. The one-of-a-kind state agency is tasked with providing advice and opinions on the interpretation and implementation of the state's Freedom of Information Law, Open Meetings Law, and Personal Privacy Protection Law. Robert, welcome back to the Vox Pop. Everybody out there, give us a call. We're waiting to hear from you at 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Well, this is sort of a fascinating story as we see it today. The Times certainly doesn't appear to be very happy with the Cuomo administration. And, you know, I'm sure that you're going to tell us the straight of it as you see it. I think it should be pointed out that, you know, you've always been an independent operator. You've always been able to speak your mind. You know, a lot of us have envied you because you have no boss. The name on the bottom of the paycheck is still the governor, right?
True enough. But I have always viewed my client as the law.
Yeah.
And all we ever try to do is give what we believe to be the right answer under the law, regardless of who asks the question.
Now, if you said something on this radio show today, Robert Freeman, and you ticked off Andrew Cuomo, which my understanding of Andrew Cuomo is well enough, is to know that he doesn't like to be ticked off, would you do it, or would you say, uh-oh, I got to feed my family?
At this point in my life, and I suppose this is consistent with the way I viewed my job forever, again, I would do my best to give what I consider to be the right answer under the law and let the chips fall where they may. That's the way it is every day of my life, and the truth is, and I've said this publicly, if a day goes by when I don't upset somebody in government somewhere, chances are pretty good that I haven't come to work.
Well, yeah, but it's one thing to accept, you know, accept the schnook on the fourth level and another the great kahuna.
I do think, though, that the governor understands. I think he understands the function, which goes back to the days of his father. His father was essentially my boss, his Secretary of State,
sure,
in 1975. And to his credit and to the credit of the people who surround him, I hear from the executive chamber more frequently than ever in the past with any other governor. And in fact, his counsel, Mylon Dennerstein, asked me to do a training program for staff in the chamber, which I did. It was great. It was collegial. They listened, and I think everybody benefited.
So let's precede this particular brouhaha that has happened. Could you go through it with us?
Sure. I don't know where you want to start.
Well, let's just start with the Times article this morning, which basically says that Jimmy Vielkind of the Times Union had asked, had gotten some information, went to recheck it, and it had disappeared, and that the Times had been misinformed about when they Freedom of Information something were told that it didn't exist, when in fact it did, and the Cuomo administration and the archives people had in New York State had to apologize.
Well, my understanding is, and I don't know all the details, was that yes, maybe mistakes were made, and it's not unusual for a government agency to say, sorry, we don't have it, and they take a second look and find out that they do. And so much of the Freedom of Information Law involves how a request is made, how an agency maintains its records. Clearly, under the law, the government is not required to go through a haystack in an effort to find the needle. the law says that an applicant must reasonably describe the records. Now, that's really sort of an aside from the issue, but I think what you're getting at, and tell me if I'm wrong.
I will.
Is the...
You're wrong. No, go ahead.
Sorry. Is the review of records by the Times Union.
Yeah.
And later on, the contention that some of those records could justifiably have been withheld. Is that accurate?
Well,
is that part of it?
Yes, it's part of it. But that the records, which the Times Union apparently had before, had been taken away from the state archives, and that the Cuomo administration was combing the archives to make sure that nothing, while he was Attorney General, would be there that they didn't want there.
Well, didn't want there is different from what need not be disclosed. And let's think about this. Let's think about this. I often refer to the Aretha Franklin principle of law. Do you know that one?
I don't.
Come on, tell me.
No, I don't.
What's the thought when you hear the name Aretha Franklin in terms of a song?
That great song, which I keep forgetting. Yeah, go ahead.
You keep forgetting. Usually people go R-E-S-P-E-C-T,
oh, yeah,
but that's
sure,
not it.
Back. No,
that's
but
not
then
it.
There's another one.
I'm thinking of the one that was made famous in the movie at the Blues Brothers.
Uh-huh.
Grossed $5, 5 billion people have seen it. Aretha played a waitress. And behind the counter, she sang,
I remember.
You better think, you better think. And I refer to the Aretha Franklin principle all the time. Why? In this context, let's think about this. The governor was not attorney general a terribly long time ago. He was attorney general within the past couple of years. And certainly there are cases, there are issues that were alive when he was attorney general, which may be alive today. Certainly, there are names that appear in the records which could justifiably be withheld, witnesses, informants. There are any number of possibilities.
Mm.
Now, and this is something that comes up frequently. When a request is made to a government agency, it goes to the so-called records access officer. That is the person who has the duty of coordinating the agency's response to requests for records. Well, what if the access officer really doesn't know a heck of a lot about the records? What if the access officer is not really familiar with the impact of disclosure? What does that person do? That person gets in touch with somebody who is familiar with the content and the effect of disclosure. And I think that that's what the archives did. I think that that's what the archives did. When requests were made for records that related to the governor in his capacity as AG, the people at the state archives did not know necessarily what the impact of disclosure would be.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, but let me speak for a moment. What if, I'll make this up just as a hypothetical.
Okay.
What if, in fact, the Cuomo people figured out that there was something in a memo, for example, that they didn't want? What if it was about his time as AG when he did an investigation of Elliot Spitzer's relationship with Troopergate and whether or not, and what if there was a piece of paper in there? This is all hypothetical, of course. What if there was a piece of paper in there that said, because remember the whole issue there was Joe Bruno and whether Joe Bruno had improperly used an airplane. What if there was a piece of paper that said, and I quote hypothetically, we know that Joe Bruno went here, did his political stuff, got back on the plane, came back, didn't do any official government business, and therefore should not have been using the plane, and we knew it, and we didn't say it. What if that was on that piece of paper?
Well, and to whom was that memo addressed?
I have no idea.
You have no idea.
No.
Was it an internal memo?
Yes.
All right. I'm going to talk too much like a lawyer. Very basically, FOIL says that all government records are available except records or portions of records that fall within a series of exceptions to rights of access. One of them deals with so-called interagency and intra-agency materials. You know, you took Latin, right?
No, of course
you
not.
Didn't take Latin.
No, I was lucky to get through Spanish. Go ahead.
Well, I took 4 years. You know, it was back in the days when even Jewish boys took Latin.
I'm not surprised.
But in any case, inter, between or among agencies, intra, the in-house kind of communication.
That much I knew.
The Court of Appeals has told us that the intent behind that provision is to preserve a deliberative process, to enable people in government to express their opinions, their recommendations, their advice, without an obligation to disclose. Now, other elements of those materials, those that consist of statistical or factual information, policy determinations or external audits.
There's some thin lines here.
But if the bottom line, if the last line is we should do something or such and such should happen, my guess is that a court would look at that and say, that is somebody's recommendation.
Okay, but it's already been sent, Bob, to the archives.
Yeah.
And they already had it. And the Times Union, frankly, already seemed to have had it themselves.
Let me make the point. An agency may withhold in certain circumstances. It's not obliged to do so. But the choice is up to the agency. And there are loads of circumstances, you know.
No, I know this. But let's face it. Well, first, let's take a break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. The Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting American Impressionism, masterworks in watercolor and pastel, featuring works by Mary Cassatt and Child Hassam. ArkellMuseum.org. The Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton, since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner, banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor. BlueBonnetDiner.net. SPAC, presenting the 22nd Annual Saratoga Chamber Music Festival, sponsored by WAMC and WMHT, with celloist Johannes Moser performing Bach, Britten, Lozowski, and Schubert on Sunday, August 5th. SPAC.org. And Paul Rich & Sons Home Furnishings and Design, downtown Pittsfield. Furniture, oriental rugs, mattresses, and interior design for living inside and out. Delivery throughout the Northeast, paulrich.com.
And we are back, thanks to Zachary. Here with the wonderful Bob Freeman, one of the most respected men in state government. And we're going to go, because we have him on the line for a long time now, to Bill in Glenville. Okay, Bill, 1-800-348-2551. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, hi, Alan, and thanks. And hi, Robert. I'm thinking back to the time when democracy would have been practiced in an open forum, and everybody knew what everybody said. So here are a couple of open government proposals that sort of aim at that ideal. Now, the first one is probably way too sweeping, and it would drive the conversation between individuals and government underground. But here it is. All information subject to freedom of information laws must be put online immediately upon its receipt or generation by any governmental entity.
Okay. Should I respond?
Yes.
I think you failed to abide by the Aretha Franklin principle.
I did.
What if you send your tax return to the Department of Tax and Finance? Should that be posted online right away?
I said subject to freedom of information laws.
Everything is subject to. Whether it's available is another story. And the
Available. I meant to modify it to say available.
Okay. You live in Glenville, a relatively small town. There are more than 700 towns in New York. And if we had to post virtually everything that's been requested and disclosed, or simply that exists that is available under FOIL, we would be absolutely buried. And in fact, one of the issues that has afflicted the federal government in particular involves the reality that if we put a mountain of information online, it's difficult for members of the public to find what they need. Now, if we can make it available with a search kind of engine or tool that enables us to retrieve or extract what we want easily, I think, yes, that would be great. That would be great, but I don't know that we've reached that point yet.
Of course, that's what I mean, a Wikipedia-type thing where you can search. It's open to Google, and you have the Google search engine. Let me state the more modest one,
okay,
which might help. When a governmental entity transfers or receives money, the amount payer and payee must be made available immediately online.
To the extent that that's doable, certainly in most instances, that would not be objectionable. That would not be objectionable. And in fact, again, looking at the local government level, which are smaller, and it's easier for them in so many instances to do justice to a freedom of information law or an open meetings law, there are many circumstances in which a local government does post online a great deal of information concerning the receipt and disbursement of government funds. You will live in a town, the abstract that your town clerk prepares, I don't know whether it's posted online or not, but it could be. And there are some towns that do exactly that.
Okay, but I think, Bill, you know, and Bob, we're getting away from what I consider to be the main reason to do this program. And let me quote from the Times Union. While the governor took office vowing to run an administration that is, quote, the most transparent and accountable in history, he and his team are noted for their meticulous management of information. And then they go on to say, this tendency appears to extend to the archives. Lacewell, a top deputy to Cuomo at the Attorney General's office, removed several documents from the case files after reporters had seen them. She extracted the daily calendars and notebooks of Ellen Bibin, who managed the Attorney General's Public Integrity Bureau for Cuomo before becoming the state's top ethics watchdog this year, even though many of the items in the schedule appeared to be mundane. Lacewell even pulled a presentation on how to improve traffic at the office's website. Okay, so it would appear that this doesn't, to me anyway, pass the stink test. You know, it was there, a reporter had it, now they go in and they limit access to it. And, you know, I am in total sympathy with Bill, but of course I'm not the governor, and therefore I'd like to have some ability to talk to my staff without being, without anybody looking over my shoulder. But I am saying to you, Bob, that this does not smell well.
Well, again, let me talk like a lawyer because I happen to be.
No, you made that point.
Happen to be, and yes, I have discussed these kinds of issues with people at the archives as well as Linda Lacewell in the governor's office. And there is a series of judicial decisions dealing with what has become known as the inadvertent disclosure. You go into an office and you ask for whatever it may be. You see it. The next day you ask for a copy and the agency people say, wait a minute.
Yeah. But let me
finish.
Let me finish. Okay, go ahead.
Let me finish.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have seen in this first place. We had the ability to withhold it. Now you can't have a copy. The courts have said that is okay.
Yeah.
And to the best of my knowledge, that is essentially what happened. Whether the stuff was mundane is separate from whether it could have been withheld. And in fact, Jim Odotto obtained copies of some of those materials. He brought them to my office, and he had me look at them. And when
Jim
O'Donnell,
for everybody,
from the Albany Times Union. Mm-hmm. He is one of the two reporters who went to the archives and obtained copies of some of the materials. And his question was, could these materials properly have been withheld if sought under the Freedom of Information law? And my response, based upon the content of those materials, was, yes, they could have been. Whether they, again, had to be withheld is separate from whether they could have been withheld.
Okay, and I say it doesn't pass the stink test. I'm not speaking as a lawyer because I am not a lawyer. I am saying that it could well be that they take a look at this stuff. They say, my God, our chief ethics watchdog could be implicated in this as a result of all this. We're going to grab that stuff, even though we already the Times Union already has the material. Now, that, it seems to me, is what this is about.
Your statement, I think, is kind of unfair.
Really?
Here's our chief watchdog who could have been implicated. What does implicated suggest something nefarious?
Well, I'm just, no. I'm just reading what it says here.
Okay.
And that is, and notebooks of Ellen Bibin, who managed the Attorney General's Public Integrity Bureau for Cuomo before becoming the state's top ethics watchdog.
Okay, what does that implicate?
Well,
it doesn't implicate anything. She was functioning as an attorney. And yes, I looked at some of those materials. And to my mind, at least some of it consisted of what is called attorney work product, which need not be disclosed.
Okay, we're going to, thank you for that. And let's go to Willard in Hudson. Willard, you're on.
Alan, I have a great deal of respect for you for putting up with this fine gentleman who's probably sitting across from you at the desk.
An old friend of mine. I love the guy. Go ahead.
Well, it sounds as though he's trying to deconstruct everything. And I think he's learned well from his mentor, Mario Cuomo, another pompous, posturing buffoon. Alan, if you don't mind, I'm going to get off in a second. If you can remember Bob Grant.
Yep.
From
I remember
the radio,
very well. Yep.
Who had a salute to Mario. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but...
And a salute to Andrew. Mario and Andrew, ascendame. Duze
Okay. Goodbye. Jeez. That's not respectful. We don't want that. Never have, never will. Put that name on the list.
Can I offer just a little point to, you know, our office is very small. The Committee on Open Government has a staff of two. And we have written over the course of years in the neighborhood of 25,000 advisory legal opinions. No governor, or for that matter, Secretary of State, has ever said, please write it this way, don't write it that way, don't respond at all. It simply hasn't happened. And the impression that your last caller has is very simply, it's inaccurate.
Well, it's not only inaccurate, it wasn't well stated. It wasn't nice. This is a program, this is not the Bob Grant Show. This is a program where you and I can have this discussion on this very issue, and we can respect each other, and we can disagree with each other.
Absolutely.
But that's what this is about. And the number is 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Now, politics, I often explain to my students and to everybody who listens, is the authoritative allocation of scarce resources. And information to a government can be a scarce resource. People withhold it. There are times that it can make you look good, it can make you look bad, you can be a little paranoid about it, and you say, I don't want anybody looking over my shoulders. But government is different from other things in that, If you don't have good information, you can't be a good citizen. You can't make decisions. And I know your whole life has been dedicated to that proposition.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. You know, I have said 1,000 times, I've repeated what Judge Louis Brandeis said now nearly 100 years ago. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. It really is. We shed light on whatever it may be. And how do we do that? It's through the acquisition of information, often obtained under the Freedom of Information Law, or even more often today, by attending the meetings of your school board, your town board, your city council, whatever it may be. You find out what's going on. And when we do, we have the ability to offer constructive comments as citizens.
If there is something, I don't know how to parse this, how to say it, but if there is something like this brouhaha that is so difficult for the Cuomo people, and all of the names of the big shots are in it, this seems to be dangerous for them. I just think they made a major mistake by engaging the New York Times, the Albany Times Union, and others, that if they just hadn't done that, this would not have blown up in their faces the way it seems to have done.
I have to agree with you. Sometimes we make issues where, in so many instances, they would not exist if we reacted somewhat differently. The best way to attract attention is to whisper. Everybody wants to hear what somebody is saying if we whisper. And
yes, often
the same is so when the government says, no, you can't have it. I mentioned this to you earlier. I don't think that most of what we do is really that important. It's really not that important, and it goes away. The fact is that as Americans, we are so bombarded with information that unless something is really, really earth-shattering, we're going to forget about it in practically no time at all. And I mentioned to you, should I talk about the love letter syndrome?
Sure, go ahead.
Well, I do lots of training. I do lots of speaking before government groups, as well as citizens groups, students. And I know that people in government, as well as others, are sensitive about seeing their names in the newspaper, seeing their faces on TV.
Sure.
And I'll ask the crowd, well, gee, how many of you have ever gotten a love letter? You know, and there are a couple of people that, yes, I get them all the time. What do most people do when they get a love letter? They read it over and over and over again. They read in every conceivable shade of meaning. They remember it until the day they die. Well, what happens when the average person, which includes most government employees, what happens when they see their names in print? They read the article the way most people read a love letter. They read it over and again. If the reporter got 95% of it right, 5% of it, a tone they don't like, the instant reaction is, I knew I couldn't trust that reporter, when in reality, the reporter is a kid, is from South Carolina, has no political agenda, just trying to do his or her job. But the person who sees his or her name in print remembers it forever. On the other hand, the average reader, again, because we're so bombarded with news and information, will forget about it in practically no time at all.
Sure.
And I can tell you that somebody is going to come. I'm a walker. I took the bus for 25 years. Somebody is going to stop me in the street and say, hey, you know, I heard you on Fox Pop. I saw you on TV. I saw your name in the newspaper. And I always ask them, well, what'd you think about what I said? You know, I don't know what you said, but, you know, you look marvelous. You know, you look great. It doesn't mean that much. And my belief is that if your name appears in print and it doesn't have the words murder or indictment next to it, usually it's pretty good news. And people in government, in my opinion, should remember that.
I don't disagree with a great deal of that. Let's go to Alex in Crumville. Alex, you're on.
All right. To surmise this in one question, are you really attempting to get to the truth of the matter, or are you trying to protect and hide somebody's agenda for your own gain?
So who's the question addressed to, me?
To the lawyer who's talking about this. It's like, are you really attempting to find the truth of the issue, or are you trying to protect somebody to evade the truth?
I am not trying to protect anybody. I am simply trying to give the right answer under the law. And you talk about gain. I am not working for a heck of a lot.
But does the law protect people from telling the truth?
No, I tell the truth all the time. I try to give.
I don't think that's his question. What's the question? It seems like the laws are designed to protect people from being accountable from telling the truth, and that should not be the law.
I don't quite understand what you're getting at.
I do.
I'm saying if there's disclosure, they should disclose it, and there shouldn't be a law whether they can decide whether they don't want to disclose it or not.
Well, I suppose if you feel that way and you believe that there should be mandatory disclosure, you do what we do it every year. We make recommendations to the state legislature designed to improve the laws.
And then they don't do it.
If they agree, and sometimes they actually do. We see improvements. Can I tell you about an improvement in the law? Where do you live, Alex?
Ulster County.
You know, there's an amendment to the open meetings law that went into effect in February, which deals with frustration that we have heard expressed by so many people over the years. They go to meetings, they're sitting in the third row, and the board in the front of the room is referring to page 2, fourth paragraph, and nobody knows what they're talking about. Well, this new provision in the open meetings law basically says that if a record is scheduled to be discussed in public, if it's available under the Freedom of Information Law, or if it is a proposed resolution, a local law, rule, it is supposed to be made available in advance, either on paper in the old-fashioned way or on an agency's website if the agency has the ability to do that. And that, I think, is the biggest change in the open meetings law in 30 years. People will actually be able to follow along and know what's going on before the meeting occurs.
Well, Alex, Bob may take some issue with what you said, but I agree with it.
The full truth should be disclosed, like the terrible effects of putting radon from radioactive cuttings and fracking on farmland in Western New York. And until the truth is disclosed, we're living in a nightmare, and we shouldn't
Alex.
Be. We should be transparent, and we should be truthful, and not lie about radioactivity and the issues we face today.
Alex, as you know, we've done an awful lot on that, and we will do more, but I really like the central premise of what you said. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
All right, good day.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to David in Stone Ridge. David, you're on.
Oh, thanks, Alan. I just wanted to say that we forget that the Cuomo administration might have been thinking about 2016 and their potential presidential run, and the power of the opposition researcher from the Republicans might scare, or their primary opponent might scare them a lot more than, in fact, the New York Times or the Albany Times Union.
Well, that's right. But I got to tell you, David, in all honesty, I have, you know, said some things about the New York Times. It's never easy to do it. They are an extraordinarily powerful institution. And, they have a lot of power. And I think my own premise here is that Cuomo was just being dumb. and you know, I don't want a bad word here, but somewhat overreacting to the, you know, to what this was. This was a mistake in my mind. Bob, you know, I don't know that Bob wants to talk about the politics of the situation. He wants to talk about the law.
Absolutely.
And David, mm-hmm. thank you so much for calling. Appreciate you hearing from Stone Ridge. Believe me, I do. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We will be right back.
Support for WAMC comes with Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York. Providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, glaucoma management, and specialty contact lens fitting. 845-336-6310. The Palace Theater, Albany, New York. Presenting John Prine and Lucinda Williams in concert Friday, August 17th. PalaceAlbany.com for tickets. The Red Lion Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, offering accommodations for vacationers and business meetings with access to the Berkshire's cultural events. RedLionInn.com. Hudson River Valley National Historic Area, announcing Hudson River Valley Ramble, weekends in September, events showcasing the natural and cultural resources of Hudson River Valley. HudsonRiverValleyRamble.com. And Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years, now expanding into the Westfield area. RichardsFuel.com.
Not that it matters.
And we are back with the Vox Pop with the extraordinary Robert Freeman, who is telling it like he sees it, and so am I. Let's go to Jamie in Ellenville. All right, Jamie, you're on.
Hey, Alan. You know, I think I could expect that he may sound like Mario, and he may look like Mario, but he's not Mario. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It's just like when Mario came from, like, you know, St. John's and Queens in the streets, like, Andrew comes from, you know, the Skull and Crossbone world, like Yale University. And we get very nervous when we start to see things not, you know, being exposed. Like, we're not saying that. I understand in this media world, like, sometimes politicians, they spend so much time having to be careful. But we get a little nervous whenever we see this happen. Am I wrong?
From my perspective, we are certainly not wrong. And I'm not going to ask Bob to reply to that, because that ain't his job. But I am very concerned about this.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think it takes guts to take on the New York Times or even the Times mm-hmm. Union and the rest of it. But this does not, in my mind, pass the stink test. It's that easy.
Yeah.
These other guys had the documents already. They go down and they start combing through the archives and the rest of it. I think it's just a dumb move because it has exploded. You know, I know he's got some of the best minds in the state working for him.
That'd be tough today, though, with
the
way everything's blocked. Yeah. You know, every word's out, and you always got to be careful. But, you know, for Andrew, New York State, upstate starts at the Westchester border.
I've always said it starts at Yonkers myself.
You know, and like, you know, we get nervous. Like, you know, it's just that big business and all the fracking, everything else going on. It's like, you know, is it the people's interest or is it the business interest? And we don't like secrets.
Okay, something's wrong with your phone, so we're going to let you go. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Bye. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I can guarantee you that if you want to get in on this, you'll get in right now. Again, 1-800-348-2551. So, Robert Freeman, I take it that you are not consigliere to the Cuomo administration. They don't come to you and say, is this a good tact for us to be taking, right? I mean, they don't call you up and say, should we? Because the politics of the situation is not what you do.
You know, when I hear from people in the administration, typically the issue is not something that focuses on politics. It's a question that focuses on the law. And I reply to them as I would to anybody else. And again, you know, I hear fairly frequently from people in the executive chamber, and I appreciate the fact that they call and ask questions. What do you think about this? What should we, are we obliged to disclose? Can we?
No, obliged to is one thing. That's under the law. I'm talking about, Bob, we got a little situation here. You know, you about this stuff. Do you think we should take on the New York Times or not?
That's not the kind of question that I ever get.
That's not the kind of question.
Not the kind of question that I ever get.
And I think it may speak also.
They wouldn't ask me.
No.
Why should they ask me?
Right.
I'm a bureaucrat.
But
I'm on my seventh governor.
It may also speak to the idea that, you are in a very strategic place for them. The law is there. Alex Cole before said, forget about all the nonsense. You know, is it right or is it wrong? Is it disclosure? Is it not? You're the lawyer. Obviously, when the legislature writes a law, they write it with themselves in mind, for example. We know, we just saw that with the disgraceful new ethics commission that they've got. They create an ethics commission. They put the members onto the ethics commission. That ethics commission hasn't done, well, squat. Up until now, we haven't seen anything going on. But anyway, a lot of people are on the phone. Let's go to Ronald in Averill Park. Ronald.
Yes, how are you?
Good, go ahead.
I think part of the problem here is that you're asking, or we're not asking, but the governor is reviewing his own product. And I think in order to have a better sense of fairness in terms of credibility, in and of the very fact that he is the person reviewing his own documentation, it gives the illusion that there's something to hide. And I think that has to be dispelled before anything else.
Well, how would you dispel it?
Well, one of the things that I'd like to see is something along the lines of an ombudsman, but that takes too much time.
And happens? They always get themselves an ombudsman, and then the ombudsman, ends up eating a certain amount of dirt, if you know what I mean.
Yes, well, hopefully you'll get somebody better than Senator Stennis to listen to the tapes. But the point... But the point I'm trying to raise is that I'm sure that there must be a judge someplace or somewhere that could look at these things and pass a...
Well, it happens all the time.
You know that happens all the time. You know, the procedure, and this is true in every state agency, every unit of local government, a request comes into that government agency and somebody at the agency reviews whatever it may be and determines what should be public and what's
not.
And
if they say no, they come to Bob Freeman, he says you're entitled to it, and now it goes to the court.
Well, sometimes it goes to the court, and the court does have the opportunity to review records behind closed doors to figure out what's public and what's not.
Yes, but that's only, Bob, and I think Ronald's point is very well taken, that's only the law.
That's only the law, and it's only when people go to court.
The judge, as Ronald is saying, should have the power it's in the public interest to have
this. You mentioned the word ombudsman. Last night, I was in the city to participate in a panel involving the launching of a book, and I wrote a chapter, and it involves reforming media laws abroad. And in fact, the host of the panel was Dave McCraw from the New York Times, the general counsel. And one of the first questions was, does our kind of law, does our model work, or are there others that work better? And the truth is, at least my view is, that our law in the United States does not work nearly as well as it should, that we can indeed learn lessons from other nations. In some places, there is an ombudsman. In some places, there is a commission, which actually has the ability, unlike ours, we advise. There are commissions that have the power to decide. And in many instances, they've done great work. Why? Because if they appear to be under the thumb of the government, they lose their credibility.
Exactly.
They're nowhere.
Exactly.
They're nowhere. And that seems to work.
But that's the overall problem. As Alan has pointed out before, and maybe the New York State legislature is an aberration, but the point is that nowhere else, nowhere else does it seem that...
No, stop with this. No, stop with this. Nowhere else, because that's as soon as you say that, you lose.
I realize
you're
that.
Done.
But
okay.
I realize that. But the New York State Legislature seems to have this pattern, and I think unless Governor Cuomo finds a neutral party that's credible, he is not gonna dispel this problem.
Okay,
it's gonna tag him.
Ronald, I'm gonna let you go because there are other people behind you, and we still have phones open if anybody wants them. But thank you, Ronald. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Alan. Yeah. Bye bye.
1-800-348-2551. We're counting down to the end of this very interesting hour, I think. Anyway, Linda in Schenectady. Linda, you're on. Linda.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I've had a great deal of difficulty requesting records from the city of Schenectady, records such as the code enforcement department records, just their hiring policies, their training policies. They've refused to give any of these things, just saying that the records cannot reasonably be located. But also towing records between a company that the city does business with, they write back and say that there's records which exist between this towing company, which they've had a arrangement with for at least 10 years. And they're very difficult to get a response that's cooperative from the city of Schenectady. And I don't understand.
Okay,
how
Linda, Linda, we got your point. Because we're coming to the end of the show, I'm going to ask Bob to keep his answer short also. Bob?
You didn't call me, and I could tell you who to deal with at the city of Schenectady. Her name is McCutcheon, and if she has a question about what's public and what's not, she calls me, and I give, again, what I believe to be the right answer under the law. The kinds of materials that you're talked about, in my opinion, in all likelihood are or should be easy to find and unquestionably would be public.
Linda, that's great, and you have your marching orders, Linda. Call Bob Freeman.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks
all
a
right.
lot. Yeah,
bye-bye. Bye.
Okay, we'll go 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are excellent. Let's go to Jim in West Shokan. Jim, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I've watched Robert's rulings over the years and with admiration and...
What do you mean, drulings?
He said rulings, not drulings. Rulings.
Okay, rulings.
And they're not rulings, they're opinions.
Opinions, determinations, however way you want to phrase it. But I've often wondered, when I hear that a public board is in violation of the open meetings law, they've done something that they should have done public, what are the enforcements for that, and what are the penalties for that? It always seems like a slap on the wrist to me.
You know, I used to describe the open meetings law as having baby teeth, but it's grown bigger teeth in the past few years. The state legislature has actually improved the law. Number one, if, for example, a court finds that significant deliberations occurred in private that should have occurred in public, you, the person who's brought the lawsuit, have to be awarded attorney's fees. Second, if action was taken that was preceded by secrecy in violation of the open meetings law, a court has the authority to invalidate the action. And most recently, and I don't know if you remember this, Alan, Governor Patterson vetoed a bill that would have given a court the authority to fine government bodies that violated the open meetings law. Patterson said no good because the taxpayers would be footing the bill. So instead, the law was amended a couple of years ago to include a penalty that many consider to be the worst of all. A court can order, and courts have done so, training given by the Committee on Open Government.
That's disgusting.
Yes, it is disgusting. And that's what we do. And there was one school board that said, oh, we'll come to Albany. And I said, we're doing it on your home turf. The public will be invited. The news media can be there. And it was an educational experience. That was the intent of the legislation.
Okay, but let me ask you this, and I think Jim would want me to ask you this. Why shouldn't you be the last stop? Forget about what the legislature says in its incumbent protection plan or self-protection. Doesn't it make sense? One-stop shopping, they go to you, and you rule, as opposed to opinionate, and you say, give them the stuff. And I, Robert Freeman, grand wizard of this, say you do that, and otherwise you're in trouble.
You know, there is one state that has a commission that has that kind of function. That's
okay.
Connecticut.
Just so you'll know, is number two on this morning's published list in the least corrupt states in the country.
I saw. Didn't it have a governor who went to, what was
yeah,
it?
Well,
Jeff?
So.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably why they made it better.
And it involved secrecy. But
why they made it better.
In any case.
All he wanted was the convicts to paint his house or something like that.
Connecticut has a commission that has the authority to make determinations. Connecticut, as you know, has about 3 million people. Everybody lives within an hour of the state capital. Its budget is more than 10 times the size of ours, which I grant is minuscule. But
that's not by accident. On purpose.
That's on purpose. The cost of performing that function in New York would be millions and millions and millions of dollars. Why? You have to go through due process. You have to hire people to actually...
Hey, tough darts.
Read. It would cost a ton of money. And we've had questions about, and I've joked with my counterparts over there, which function works better. When I get a call from John or Jane Q. Public or a member of the news media, I can offer an opinion on the spot. sometimes, not always, sometimes that is enough to encourage compliance.
And sometimes not.
I know, sometimes not. But I know the reporters call often knowing the answer. They can't print their opinion. They call me for the quote. And I have no hesitation about giving it. Sometimes that works. In Connecticut, for what it's worth, because it is a process that involves due process and therefore time, chances are pretty good you're not going to get a determination for months. So the question
is... But you'll get a determination that'll stick.
You may get a determination that'll stick, and if the agency doesn't like it, it can go to court, too. I don't know which function works better. Yes,
I do.
In the best of all worlds, I would love to have the power to decide.
Okay, me too. I'd love you to have it. Jim, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And let's go to Mark in Saugerties, 1-800-348-2551. It's your station. It's your program. Let me hear from you. 1-800-348-2551. Mark, go.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank your guests for being on the radio show. It's not easy when people call and are combative, but I'm glad that people are being respectful, and I'm loving the dialogue.
Thank you.
With the exception of one guy. You're right. So do you have anything substantive to add to this besides the wonderful compliment for Bob Friedman, which is deserved?
Well, I'm just saying that he is a bureaucrat. He's doing what he needs. He's doing his job, and I'm glad to hear that he's on the radio.
Okay, thank you, Mark.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, that's great. 1-800-348-2551. Well, folks, there's nobody on the phone right now. We've got 3 minutes to go. This is your chance to check in. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Well, Bob, I know that every year, at the end of the year, you put in recommendations for making things stronger. What are some of those recommendations you've got?
Well, a primary recommendation involves what other nations do that we don't do yet in the United States for the most part. People ask me which state has the best freedom of information law. My answer is Mexico. Why? Because Mexico drafted its law the past decade, and built information technology into its law. One of the points that we have pushed involves what has become known as proactive disclosure, where the government places records and data on its website even before anybody has to make a request under FOIL. When they do that, everybody wins. The records are simply there for the taking. The government doesn't have to deal with the request. John and Jane Q. Public don't have to make
and
requests.
And I may point out, and I'm deadly serious about this, reporters may have more access, but they're also being murdered there every day by the drug cartels.
That is true, but Mexico, for what it's worth, has been serious about its attempt to make things better, at least in terms of freedom of information.
I hear you. Jim in Middletown. Jim, you're on. Go ahead. We're coming out of town here. Go ahead.
Hi. I was just curious. I've been hearing a lot about this Patriot Act thing, and I just tuned in. I don't know exactly what you guys were talking about.
No, well, we're talking about a different thing today, Jim. I think the Patriot Act is well worth revisiting on the Vox Pop, you know, again, but that's not what we're talking about today. Bob, did you have anything to say about that?
Other than that, there are elements of the Patriot Act which I think would not have passed but for the fear on the part of certain members of Congress that they would be accused of being unpatriotic.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I heard they want to take our guns away and stuff like that.
Okay. I don't want to talk about guns.
That's another day. Thanks, Jim.
All right.
Okay, let's go to Jackie in Boston Spa. Jackie, you're going to be the last, so make it good.
So with the new Public Information Posting Act, if a board posts their information for their meeting and the documenting material, but a board member at the meeting wants to bring up a resolution that wasn't given to the board or the public at a time, are they supposed to delay a vote on that?
No, because the law doesn't require that a board do what's impossible. And certainly at practically any meeting I've ever attended, there are issues that come up, there are areas of discussion that arise that could not have been predicted.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it? You don't want to fight? 1-800-348-2551, but we're basically out of time, and I want to thank everybody who called in. Thanks to the wonderful Robert Friedman for joining us today. Vox Pop, okay. Support for Vox Pop comes from the Lake George Association, New York, Teaching Ecology and Stewardship, on board the Floating Classroom, which sails every Wednesday in July and August. LakeGeorgeAssociation.org. PS21 Performance Spaces for the 21st Century, Chatham, New York, presenting the Jamal Jackson Dance Company, performing work rooted in African and American traditions on Saturday, July 28th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, July 29th at 2 p.m. PS21Chatham.org. And SUNY IT offering online graduate degree programs, including the MBA in Technology Management, graduate.sunyit.edu. For EDU for more information. The Blue Bonnet Diner, Northampton, since 1950, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Banquet facilities seating 150, banquet menus, bar services, and dance floor. BlueBonnetDiner.net. Thanks again for joining us today on The Vox Pop. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update. I have to go answer the phone. I think the governor's office is calling. So long, everybody.